Welcome to Empowered, Mind Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out. Welcome to the Empowered Mind, Empowered Health podcast for the Conscious Game Changers with Dr. Jane. Please like, share, and subscribe. Just be the wave. Today we have Marina Reed, a Canadian. She has lived and worked as an educator, an artist, a journalist, and a writer, and she loves horses. Welcome, Marina.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Marina, you have recently written 6 nonfiction books presenting a new way to work with grief. Remember, it's okay, is their title. Right. And you state that we live in a grief avoidant society. Many who grieve feel isolated and alone. And I know that this series of books came from your own personal pain. And often through pain, we create beautiful things. As a, you know, like a metamorphosis, as you say. Mm-hmm. Can you describe where they came from? And then we're going to go into what each book is about.
Sure. So the Remember series had a very organic creation. 6 years ago, I very suddenly and tragically lost my husband. It was a great shock. Didn't get to say goodbye. It was really quite a nightmare. And I went into a very dark place myself. I didn't really want to talk to anybody, nothing that I could find because I am a reader. And I did go to try to search for some things that would help me. And everything I picked up was just telling me what I was supposed to think and what I was supposed to do. And so it just made me feel more and more and more alone. And people would all say the same phrases, which would make me angry. And so it just pushed me further into this hole. And there was a friend of mine who was getting quite worried about me, had another friend who had dealt in grief. And she asked if she would come over and just, you know, say hello to me. And I'd seen her kind of at my, in my neighbor's yard. So I knew who she was. Because at that time, I was just not really a fan of talking to anybody. And she came, she was very gentle, and she wasn't pushy, and she didn't even really talk about the subject. She just talked to me. And it was interesting how she allowed that safe space to develop. And we would just have tea, and then very slowly, things started to be discussed that were a little bit more about what had happened. So she was, I would say, very, very important in pulling me out of a hole that I was starting to fall in. And we ended up becoming good friends. And then as I continued in my healing, she was sort of there on the periphery. And then after about four years, I was going to do some work in Costa Rica and another writing project. And I invited her to come and stay with me for a week because I was there for a number of months. So she agreed and she came down. And when we were down there, she asked me how I would feel about writing a book about grief that she, being a psychotherapist, it had been her, it was the cherry on top of her career, but she didn't know how to write and how to do it. And right there, we created the Remember It's Okay series. We knew the title right away. And I had some very specific requirements. I said to her, if I am going to do this, this is how it has to look. There can't be words all over the page. It has to be something where people resonate with what we're writing about, because I want it to fill that space that I couldn't find anything to fill the space. I want this to fill that space. And she was in complete agreement. And it became this wonderful team work in creating something quite difficult. Like, it was a very, very difficult project. So first book, which was Loss of a Partner, that was really the only one that I wanted to do. And it turned into six. So that's how it sort of came to be. I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. And so the first one was about a loss of a partner, because that was your personal experience and how you had to pull yourself out of this black hole. And
And I think when you've experienced loss yourself, I mean, there's different, everybody goes through it differently, but there are some things that are fairly consistent with grief of someone dying. I mean, we have grief in lots of things, but when someone dies that's close to us, there are some things that are quite similar. And even though it was my experience, and I think it gives me an empathy, we did feel that it was important to interview people. So I did an awful lot of research. My background is in journalism, so that was an easy match for me. We did a lot of interviews with people who had lost a partner, or the next book being Loss of a Parent, means loss for pets, loss for of siblings, and finally loss of a child. We interviewed people. I did a huge amount of research, and from there we started to see themes that were coming up. And then it was how we were going to put that together. So the next thing I'll share with you, if you like.
Absolutely. And we do live in a grief avoidant society, don't we? We don't want to think about these things. And
no, I think the phrase that always came to me when I was actually suffering myself was that people tire very quickly of grief, but grief never seems to tire of me. And I think people who are in that, in some ways, you are in grief, depending on your closeness to the person who dies, forever. Mm-hmm. It never ends. It's not like Kubler-Ross created her stages of grief, and unfortunately, they have become like this benchmark. And the problem with that is that it was initially designed for palliative care patients who were dying themselves. It wasn't really designed for the person left behind, because we don't go through this stage of anger and then that's finished. And then we go to the next stage and then it's finished. And then, yay, we're finished. We get to the end. It's not like that. And so what we did is we created, Marion and I created a different paradigm for how we can deal with grief. And it's a color, it's like a color spectrum where we go through six colors. And it was very organic how the colors came to us. Like this, there was a lot of very organic spiritual elements to how this came together, where we really learned to trust what was coming to us. And the colors become a different language. So if you're in a red moment, you know you're in a pretty intense portion of your grief. Goes from red, orange, yellow, green, turquoise, pale blue. And if you're in a pale blue moment, you're going to have a bit of a lighter energy and you can absorb things differently. But the point is, you can have lost someone, it can be 6-7 years, and you can still find yourself in a red moment. The difference is that you recognize the red moment is not going to be your going to last forever. And you start to know, understand that those colors just circle around us all the time, better at understanding. And it gives other people a way to say, oh, are you feeling, is this an orange moment for you? Or isn't that great? You're in a turquoise place right now, right? So it changes the whole conversation about grief. And I think it's much more comforting.
Yeah. So it doesn't, it gives permission to still feel and forever.
Exactly. And, exactly. Because there's a real fear of forgetting. I think the stages kind of play into that. Well, what happens when I get to the end of the stages? Does that mean that I forget that person that I lost? And there is something that floats around in someone who is lost that is something that could happen, and we don't want that to happen. And the color spectrum It's like a map. It's like a journey in grief. And it's just constantly weaving in and out of itself in our life. And it's more real. Because that grief avoidance, you know, I would remember people saying things to me in the first, I would say, first couple of weeks. But after that, they didn't want to hear about it anymore. But it wasn't finished for me. And part of that is because the other people don't know how to deal with that pain the person in grief is dealing with. They want to have it fixed and they want it to be done because they don't want it to tarnish their life. And they don't want to have to absorb that grief themselves. So they just end up kind of saying, well, you know, time heals all wounds or all any of those things that people say that just really don't help at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real problem, that they don't really know what to do. And I guess that is the other really predominant goal of our books, is that yes, it's for the person who is struggling, but it's also for that person who wants to know really how to help and be there for the person who is grieving, what to say and what not to say, and when to just sit with somebody, and that's enough. So it's really a book that is for both. And I think Marian especially is very, very adamant about that support that we're giving to people.
Yeah, so we're going to get into these themes, but just if you're with someone that's grieving, being able to walk beside them.
Right.
Just to be there is all right. You need to do.
Right. And sometimes that is all you need to do so that they don't feel alone. You don't have to tell them what to do. You just have to be there with them. You don't have to tell them what they feel. That's really not a good idea because you really have no idea. When someone says to you, yes, I know how you feel. No, you don't. You have no clue how I feel. And for someone to say that to somebody in that place just exacerbates the pain that they're feeling. And so, yeah, that's the structure of the book. When you'd like me to explain that, it helps to understand these two voices that are present in the books.
Yes. Okay. So let's go into the structure and what the
okay.
books are. Yeah. Beautiful.
Okay. So the formats of all six books are exactly the same, where we have the color spectrum and we call them moments, where we go from red through orange, yellow, green, turquoise, pale blue. And each book will deal with all of the spectrum of color. And there are also blank pages for breath, so that as you're looking through the book, it's not filled with words. There's space to take a breath. There's space to write your story. And we give suggestions for that. You know, try doing this, try doing that. And so there is a lot of real help in trying to get people to write things down, which is very therapeutic. Each moment is structured very specifically. So after all of the interviews that we did, we would come up with themes. And this is where it became extremely difficult as a writer, because I would take all of those and create a first person narrative like a diary entry. And some people, when they read it, they think that that diary entry is from one person. And I just basically repeated it. But that's not what they are. They would be a compilation of so many stories that I would then have to ingest and live through and then recreate in a moment, so that when the person reads it, it's like they're reading their own words and thoughts. And we've had that comment from so many people. It's validating that, oh yes, that's right. That is how I was feeling. That was my pain. Those are my words. But each one of those I had to craft. And sometimes I would craft it in the form of a poem, because a poem allows us to come in through the back door sometimes if we're not ready to look at it. Allows for more flow of feeling. So there's sometimes, and diaries often have poems, so we did a combination of those. And then after the first person journal entry, Then Marion will make a comment. Sometimes there's actually a dialogue that happens, especially if it's really, some of them are very, very heavy moments. Some, you know, a lot of people in grief really consider suicide. And we don't shy away from any of those, but we bring it to the place where there is breath and there is light and there is hope. And we help other people who read the book would see that dialogue and recognize, oh, okay, that's how I could talk to the person if I know they're feeling like that. So we really, some of her responses to the moments are one line. I feel your pain, or I'm crying with you, or something like that. And sometimes then it is a dialogue, but that's the format that all of the books take.
Yeah. And you must have, like, to absorb all that and then rewrite it, it truly has to come from the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think because I went through it myself, you know, I could bring that kind of emotional understanding to it. But at the same time, there were stories that, you know, things that I would never have considered in grief, but the people were extremely honest. And some of the interviews were quite long that I conducted, and really heart-wrenching. I mean, the people were very, very present with me. So when I had to recreate these moments, after four of the books, I actually was in a little bit of a state of depression, because I had lived with so much grief in trying to make it authentic and write it in a way that others would be able to absorb. So I had to stand back and take a little break, and then finish the other two. And I think it took me a number of months to sort of recover from the whole experience, because it was very visceral and it was, you know, very real for me. And when I go back and read some of them now, I still actually can find tears. Like, just even talking about it, I have tears coming to my eyes when I just think, I just finished editing the last book, Loss of a Child, which was just incredible to write, but so important for someone to hold that in their hand eventually. So they're very real, authentic, emotional books.
Yeah. Can you share, like, maybe a little bit about a book and how it helps somebody?
Sure. And I can show you. Oh, no, I can't show you because we're not visual. Each one I can describe it to you, though. The covers of each book have a window. So there is a very consistent motif for all six. And it's a sort of a gentle white color window that's slightly open to a scene. It is a nature scene, some kind of nature. And each one of those, we were very specific in what we chose for each one. And that was our symbol of sort of book. You feel that you want to be able to eventually, you know, go through that window or that door to the next place that you can be through this pain. There was somebody who had lost a friend, and that's coming out actually next May. The loss of a friend or sibling and loss of a child is coming out next May. But when I was dealing with some reviews and getting people to read them, one of the comments of loss of a friend was that it's not a validated loss, because we can feel like a friend is our family, but then the family doesn't treat you like your family. And there's a real disconnect there, because they don't really have a chance to process their grief because they're sort of on the outside. And she said when she read the book, she just sobbed, because it was how she felt. Her friend was like her sibling. That's why it's called Loss of a Sibling or a Friend, because there's a real overlap there. And she found herself. It just happened a couple of months before. She would go to the turquoise or pale blue moments for solace. And she would read them and say, okay, I could be there. I can get there. So then when I go back and deal with this pain that I'm in now, I know that that's where I can be. And I I've heard that from a number of people, that you don't necessarily read this book from cover to cover. You go back and forth between different colors in it. And I thought that was quite beautiful, how she found such healing through a grief that she didn't feel was validated anywhere else.
Right. So reading ahead would give you the courage and the support to know that you'll get there.
Right.
But that it, you know, still involves the person you're grieving over, and you haven't lost them, really.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And you know that when you go back into that, you know, intense red or orange moments, because they are intense, like you read them and it grabs your heart for sure. Mm-hmm. But then when you get to the green and the turquoise and the pale blue, you see how those events are suddenly processed differently by the griever. And so, oh, okay, so I can do that. And loss of a pet, I had people mention that as well. Loss of a parent, same thing. So the loss for teens is a little bit different. We can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, but yeah, beautiful tool that you've created. I just love
it. Thank you.
You know, there's a comfort in knowing that, well, the pain comes from having lost someone. Like, you can't go see them again.
Right.
Even though they may be somewhere next to you, you can't see them. You can't be with them. You're alone in it, you know?
Right, right. You're not going to ever get a text again. And that was something that came up a lot, especially in the morning again for my mom. I'm never going to be able to do these luncheons that we would do on Saturday. I'll never get that birthday card from her. The thing that was difficult about the loss of a parent book is that everybody doesn't have a great relationship with their parents. I didn't have a great relationship with my parents. And so when I would be listening to these stories of people who had lost parents and they were their best friends, that was very interesting for me. And then I would interview someone that had a difficult parent. So I had to think, how am I going to put all of that? It happened. I mean, it's all there, so that if you had a difficult relationship or a great relationship, you're going to find solace in the loss of a parent book. But that's the interesting thing about loss, is that, you know, the way we feel about that person is compromised sometimes, but it doesn't diminish that they're not there anymore. So if it was a wonderful relationship, we're sad that we don't have that anymore. If it wasn't a great one, we're sad that our hope is gone to fix it.
Right. Yeah, I see that quite often, actually, in practice. And you almost have to heal yourself as well as heal that hope that is gone. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's what starts, you know, that's sort of the undercurrent of a lot of the moments in the book, is that people, when you read them, it's very, very raw and honest about what they're feeling without, and I think this is the thing, that a lot of people are very afraid to say how they're feeling, especially if it's negative. And so when they read these moments and they're reading those thoughts and feelings, it's like, oh, okay, I'm all right. I'm not crazy. I'm not a horrible person. It's right here, and this is what I can do. And so there's real comfort in that. I think the loss, the difference with the Loss for Teens book, and I wouldn't want to pick one that I think they're all powerful, but the Loss for Teens was really a gut-wrenching one. I mean, they all were, but it's a slightly different book because it's loss for teens. All the other ones are loss of somebody, but the teen one is loss for teens, because we try to deal with a variety of losses that teens feel and don't get any support for. So suicides, when their friends commit suicide, or accidents through alcohol, when they've lost a sibling or a parent to cancer. The problem with the teen is that they're going then to school. And the thing that I heard over and over again from the teens that I interviewed is that the school didn't want to deal with it. They didn't want to hear about it. They would use, they would sometimes put an announcement on the PA system that somebody had had a untimely end, or, you know, and they always felt that it just, it was so awful that that was done. But then everything was supposed to be business as usual. You know, just get lost in your work and everything will be fine. One of the things that we came to realize writing that book was that we have a grief avoidance society because as young people, we have no modeling of how to do this differently. So the Lost for Teen book, in some ways, is the most important book. And I've had some adults read it who lost someone when they were a teen, and they've said that they felt like that teen again when they read it. And finally, they felt healing for something they'd carried for 20 odd years. Like, it's just amazing some of the things that come out about that Lost for Teens book. And there was one boy who, his father was very sick with cancer when he just finished grade 8. And then as he went through high school, finally his father died at the end of grade 11, beginning of grade 12. So I spoke to him when he was going into university. And what he told me was, nobody at the school knew that was happening. Nobody knew. And he felt he had to live two lives. And it still just chokes me up that if that's one child doing that, can you imagine how many thousands of young people have no place to go to deal with their grief, no one to talk to about it? And the teens that have read this book, I've had emails from them that have I just weep when I read them because it's created such a safe space for them to and find a way through it to know how they can come out on the other side. And it's that book is very, very important as far as modeling how we can deal with grief ourselves and how we can help each other.
Yeah. You know, I lost a boyfriend when I was 19. He was in a car accident. And I was in my first year of university at the time. And it was heart-wrenching. But, you know, I don't think I fully healed it until maybe 3 years ago. Because it just got put on the side burner. And you went on with your life. But it was like this movie that played in the background for years. You know, and you never could actually look at it. It was almost too painful to look at.
Right.
I think that's what teenagers do. They just go on.
Well, they don't have a choice. That's what everyone's telling them to do as well, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all the language. And I think anyone to read the teen book who lost someone when they were young is extremely empowering for them. For teens, I also think it's an incredibly important book for educators and parents to read, to know what that teen is thinking and feeling, and to understand what you can say as a parent, as an educator, to help, and that what you're doing, for the most part, isn't the right thing. It's not helping them. So I really think this book, you know, needs to be on a curriculum in health classes in high schools for sure, so that there is really strong, good support for these kids that then will go forward in their lives and be able to know how to help others when grief happens, because grief is a part of our life, but we don't like it, right? So we put it in this little compartment and we'll give you 5 days. I had 5 days off after my husband died. 5 days, we'll give you 5 days. That's it. Now you should be done.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way. And you know, recently a good friend lost her daughter and it was heart-wrenching. I still cry with even a picture, a thought. And yeah, it's only been 2 months, but I'll stay with that. I know how to stay with it now.
Yeah.
But do you have any advice for someone who's lost, you know?
Well, I mean, I've just, it was actually just last week, the Loss of a Child book was the most difficult one for us to write. And when we, it was the last one that we wrote, and we initially did it all with poetry because I just think we couldn't go into it. And so the editor contacted me and said, we really need this to be more like the other books. So it was like rewriting the entire thing. And so we just finished that last week, and it is, it's beautiful. But I think anybody who has lost a child seriously needs to buy that book. There is magic in it. There is wonder in it. The foreword is written by another psychotherapist who lost a child. And I think it gives you a community, even if you're not taught. You feel the community in the book, and you are able to find ways of dealing with things that you will never want to say out loud to anybody, but they're said out loud in those moments. So yeah, it's every one of the books, the grief is slightly different. All of them are difficult, but each one has its different impact. And the Loss of a Child one it was really difficult to write. Yeah.
And even knowing that there's other people out there that have gone through the same thing would be comforting.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing, because all those moments are a compilation of stories from others. You start to know that. Now, when you read it, you don't think that, because it's written in first person. And as you read it, you feel it's you. It's how you feel. And for the most part, most people have said that when they read it, it's like, wow, it's like I wrote this. So there's a real resonance. And for anybody who has lost somebody, and if your friend just lost her child a couple of months ago, by the time we get to May, it's going to be still so fresh. Mm-hmm. And she'll still be in red or orange very, very easily. I mean, you cope and you get into your zone of doing what you have to do, but that's a really difficult time zone. So the red and the orange, those are the ones that are the most raw and the most graphic, and the ones that they need to feel like they're not alone in those thoughts. Yeah,
there really is, you know, there's no way of.
No, there's not. You know, and that's another thing that we came to realize as well, that grief doesn't know gender, it doesn't know age, and it doesn't know religion. Grief is sort of an international language of its own, and it spans all cultures. Even though certain religions will have certain ideas about grief, the sad part of that is that a lot of people still feel what they're feeling. And then if their religion says they shouldn't be feeling that, that even exacerbates their grief more. So our books would be great for those kind of people as well, because it's your private place to go and be validated for what you're feeling, and have a place to write down, put pictures, make your own poems, you know, and we give lots of suggestions of things to do in those blank pages. But yeah, grief has no barriers. And we've tried to write these books quite generically, in the sense that sometimes you know it's a man speaking, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you know it's a woman, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you know the gender of who's been lost, sometimes you don't. So I've tried to write it like that so that anybody coming to the book will be able to see themselves in it.
Yeah, beautiful. You know, and I've read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and they all teach how to live with the idea that we're all going to die, so that you process it along the way. But in North America, we don't do that.
No.
We avoid it. And so these books are so important.
They are so important. And I know that book that made quite a hit was You Can't Live Until You Can Die. And that was a very powerful message, in the same way as you're saying, that you can't avoid death. And I think you're right. That's what we have now taught our culture, is that we avoid it. you know, it's going to happen, but let's not think about it too much. And for goodness sake, let's not talk about it, because it'll damage and color in a negative way our living, which is completely wrong. But it's going to take some time for us to move into a new paradigm of thinking. And it's our hope that this color paradigm can become a new language that we can use to talk to each other about our grief. Because it's much more visceral when we live with colors. Colors are very important. They're archetypal, you know, they present themselves in so many cultures. And the colors we've chosen have the same impact in almost all cultures and through time. Like, it's quite fascinating, which is why the colors are so important.
Yeah, beautiful. You know, one of the ways that I have processed grief is to go into reading stories about children that have come back, reincarnation, and I'm actually interviewing someone who's gone through a near-death experience in 2 weeks, and they can describe what happened after they left their body and the souls that were around them and
right.
The healing that went on when they were there, and how comforting it was, and
yes.
How they almost didn't want to come back. And I find reading about that really helps me.
I agree. And I read a lot of those after my husband Luke died. And it was a comfort to me knowing, you know, that there is a place we go. And that when I remember a Baha'i teacher, he was a wonderful man. And I remember something he said to me years and years ago that always stuck with me. You know, he said, why do we think when we give birth and it comes from this place of darkness, because the fetus can't see anything, it's inside this nice, comfy little womb, and then it's birthed into this new world. So he said, really, that's like a death into a life. We need to start recognizing that when we die from this life, we're birthed into another. And that we need to try to see it as this circle instead of an end. And I think for me, there was a lot of comfort in that. And it really stayed with me actually for most of my life. So we still mourn that person who's gone because we want to touch them. And we want to be able to laugh with them. We want to hear their voice. We want to see their face. We're very physical beings. That's what we are. And we miss that physicality, right? And we can't deny that, because that's why we're here on this plane. We're here as physical beings, and we need to honor that. I guess the death part tries to help us recognize that we also are more than that. And you know, I guess that would be in the next series of books, but these are helping us try to deal with how we cope with losing that physicality.
Yeah, because we are the ones left here.
We are the ones left here.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the difficulty. That is truly the difficulty. And there's no way around that. There's no phrase, there's nothing anyone can say that will change that fact.
Yeah. We live in
our life. Yeah.
Yeah, we live in through 3D. And
exactly.
Can't see through that veil. And if we could,
no.
Be helpful, but we can't.
But we can. And so how do we deal with our physicality now that that person in our physical world that was so important to us isn't there anymore? And that's what the Remember books are trying to do.
Yeah. So when I think of this young girl, I actually try to feel her presence, see her, you know, talk to her. Have you ever had an experience where you actually felt your husband after he left?
I still do. It was more at the beginning, but it's really never gone. And I remember, well, still now, sometimes I will have a piece of music, like a phrase from a song, just come into my head. Like, I'll be sitting working on something, and all of a sudden this little song will come into my head, and I stop now, and I repeat it, and I'm like, where is that song from? And all of a sudden, I just get these tingles all over my body, and I know that to me. It's his way. And I've heard this from other people, that it's there's ways that they will communicate with us, and worked for me. And so then I'll sit and have a little cry because, you know, it'll be a beautiful phrase from a song, or maybe I'm struggling with something and, you know, it's like a comfort or some. He had this way of coming up behind me and giving me a little kiss on the neck. And just sometimes, just for no absolute reason at all, I just get that kind of tingly feeling that he's there. There's all sorts of stories that people have. And I think we tend to discount them because we're not supposed to think like that. But I think we need to always trust those deep instincts we have and not let people tell us, oh, well, that's just because you were sad. Oh, that's just because you wanted it to be like that. Well, even if that's true, that's fine. But don't diminish the fact that we feel them close to us. And I think they do talk to us.
Yeah. Yeah, I read a story recently, you know, when a friend had died and the person suddenly, you know, on the way to the funeral heard the song that they always listened to together. And and rarely was it ever on the radio, you know?
Exactly.
Things
right.
Like happen all the time. And
I know.
I think we should cultivate being able to listen. And
I totally agree. I think we absolutely should. And I think that's one thing that did happen. I mean, I've always been very aware, but I must say that after he died, when something would come into my head, I started to make a point of stopping and just paying attention to it for a minute. That was, I guess, one of his gifts.
Yeah. And it still happens today.
Yes, it does. It does still happen. Yeah. And it still makes me cry every time.
Yeah. My boyfriend, I would see someone suddenly in a car that looked exactly like him. That would happen for me, like maybe once a year, and everything would rush back, and
You know,
and I would feel him and say hello.
Yeah, you know? And we need to do that. It allows us to continue a connection. There's no reason that we don't have to have that connection continue. We just have to get over. We have to find a way to deal with the loss of physicality. And I think that's the real key.
Yeah. And then to find a way to continue to connect.
Exactly. And I think there are, you know, I mean, writing these books, yeah, it was a tribute to him for sure. And the first book, Loss of a Partner, I also did record that as an audiobook. So I'm not sure the Remember books lend themselves to the audiobook as well, because you don't have, you could still have your own journal. But for some people, listening to it is much easier for them. And some people who can't read, they're going to still get that healing through that. So I am glad that it's there.
Yeah, nice. So where can people find these books?
So they are on Amazon. They so anywhere in the world, you should be able to go on Amazon. You can put my name in and they should come up. You can put Remember, it's IT'S, okay. And just okay, not OKAY. It's just okay. So Remember, It's Okay, and then the list will come up. Right now, Loss of a Partner, Loss of a Parent, and Loss for Teens is out there. And I would suggest educators and parents who are dealing with teens who have lost anybody really needs to pick this book up. Loss of a pet, loss of a sibling, and loss of a child will be out next May. And but right now on Indigo, which is the chapter's website, and Amazon, and they are available in Kindle as well. And then there is the audio book, which is on Libro.fm.
Okay.
And if you go to my website, marinalreed.com, there's links for all the books there too.
Oh yes. It points you right to the right place.
Yeah. And I have links on my website to further support, like links to PTSD and things that you can do to help yourself. And so I do have a lot of other supports on my website as well.
Yeah. It's a beautiful website, and I'm going to include that in the description.
Oh, great.
So people can find you very easily.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Marina, you are actually an amazing writer. I am very grateful for what you've done. And let's just Let's just touch on a book. We're going to talk about this more in a future interview, I believe.
Okay.
But just tell us quickly what you wrote, a book, and it's a page turner. I could not stop reading it. It's Lonely in Paradise. Just tell us what that book is about.
It's based on a true story. And I guess for me, empowering people, allowing them to recognize that there are choices that they have. It's the same in the Remember books. It's about empowerment of people, right? I mean, it's empowered, so it's perfect for what you're doing. But it's Lonely in Paradise is centered around anybody who needs to learn how to become their own hero. Men need to learn that too, but it is written specifically for women who forget that they have choice, forget that they can stand on their own feet and learn how to do that. And a geographical fix or running away from a problem, it will find you. And It's Lonely in Paradise really is about how you can learn to stand on your own feet and dance again.
Yeah, and then, you know, do your magic in the moment where you are, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And Primrose Street, my other fiction book, empowerment, and it really talks about the danger of secrets and how we force people to live lives that are not authentic because we can't celebrate diversity. It's a very, very powerful, sometimes quite a dark book, but with a bright ending. But it does deal with what happens when we suppress other people's authenticity.
Right. And our own.
Exactly.
Yeah. To be authentic and our authentic self is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
And it brings all kinds of joy and health with it.
For sure. Or the opposite, right? If we don't have that, that's when bad, difficult things happen to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would encourage reading both of those books, and we're going to get into that more in a future interview because
it's wow, I'd love to.
Right? And it's what this podcast is all about. So I love connecting with you, Marina.
Thank you. I love connecting with you too, Jane. And to everybody who's listening, find your empowerment.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, it's okay.
Yes, it's okay. We're in this together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your brilliant mind and everything you've done to share with this world. And I know it took digging deep and, you know, really caring to do that.
Oh, thank you so much for that. That makes me kind of chokes me up a bit. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Just go be the wave and just be you.
Beautiful.